Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Thursday, everybody. This is none other than the king of DC media himself, William Powell. Let me introduce my co-host,
Nadia Williams.
And tonight we've got comedian, pro speaker, and motivational humorist, Avish Parashar. Before we get to Avish, let me mention that this episode is brought to you by my column, DC Actors Examiner, most easily found by Googling DC Actors Examiner. Moving right along, Nadia, tell me what's going on in the news.
Well, William, last time I did the news, we talked about the movie John Carter.
Uh-huh.
And what a huge dud it was. Well, I want to talk a little bit about the movie The Hunger Games, which has already amassed $373.3 million worldwide.
Wow.
I mean, that's pretty incredible. It surpassed the wildest industry expectations to debut to $155 million during the first weekend. And that's the third biggest opening weekend ever behind Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows and The Dark Knight. And it's
also the best
debut ever for a non-sequel. So, and that's crushing 2010's Alice in Wonderland.
I wonder why that is.
You know, it's very interesting. I mean, this is the kind of movie where, you know, it's not like Harry Potter where all the children who watch that movie want to go to Hogwarts, or people who watch Twilight and they want to date a gorgeous vampire. This is a movie about children killing other children. So it's kind of interesting that it has, you know, it has such a huge following. And, I mean, it even ends the movie also open stronger than all four of the Twilight films, which I'm very happy to say because I am not a Twilight fan.
But this was also
a film that was purchased by Lionsgate, which it really is kind of, you know, it's a big budget company, but it's still kind of small. Its biggest film to date has been Fahrenheit 9/11 from Michael Moore. So I'm definitely sure they are reaping in the benefits with this film.
Yeah, when I hear a name like Hunger Games, I'm thinking about, you know, like with the economy the last few years and all this kind of thing. I guess people are just, they're kind of grim right now. Maybe that's what it is. Oh, you got kids killing kids in the movie. I mean, that's some pretty grim stuff.
Yeah, they were expecting a huge opening, but, you know, they were kind of put in between John Carter and the Avengers, so they were, you know, not sure how they were going to do. And, of course, John Carter did miserably. I mean, you know, it was a $250 million epic, and so far it's only grossed $62.3 million. So
there were a lot of problems wrong with that film. I mean, one thing, they didn't even mention the word Mars. I mean, the original Edgar Rice Burroughs story was John Carter of Mars. And, of course, I don't know if any of our younger listeners would know that Edgar Rice Burroughs was the creator of Tarzan.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
a lot of the technology in those books are kind of a little bit outdated, really.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't know. That's really, I mean, this is a epic flop of this epic proportions. I mean, it's kind of, you want to kind of laugh, but it's sort of, I mean, somebody probably lost their job behind that. So that's probably
you know,
not.
I'm sure quite a few people lost a job behind that. So,
yeah. That's terrible. Okay, well, I see we've got Avish is on the line, apparently. No?
Yep,
who's
I'm
on
here.
The line? Hey,
Avish,
how you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
All right. Okay. Fantastic.
Welcome,
glad you came onto the show.
Thank you for having me. Thank you both.
Yes. And so, man, you've been very busy. I know you got a new book that just came out.
I do, yeah. The book is Say Yes And. It just came out February 28th, so that definitely has been keeping me busy.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Let's start off about how you got into improv.
Well, I got into improv in college, and I got kind of dragged into it, which is funny because it's kind of my whole life now. But, you know, I did theater in high school, but when I went to college, I decided it was time to be a good student and really focus on my studies, and I wasn't going to do theater. And I'd never seen improv, but I had a buddy who kept telling me, like, oh, you got to you got to join this improv group. You got to go try out for this improv group. And I just kept saying, no, you know, it's not my thing. And, you know, finally he somehow finagled his way into getting me to actually see a show. And the minute I did, I was hooked. I'm like, wow, that was awesome. I have to try out. And, you know, it just started out as a college fun activity to do. And at the time, I certainly never thought it would be my life.
Wow. So you said you did theater. What's some of the plays that you did?
Oh, wow. Let's see. My first play was The Miser by Molière. And
wow.
My first musical was Oliver. And now it sounds impressive, but these are like when I was freshman, so I had the, you know, I was like the walk-on role, the little tiny part. And I had a small enough school where they had to cast me for stuff, so the fact that it was a play set in like the 1700s in France, it was okay that you had this Indian dude walking around on stage. So I benefited from having a small school.
So talk a little bit about how you went from going not only just being a performer in improv to actually moving into being an entrepreneur.
Well, it was interesting because after I graduated college, I knew I wanted to keep doing improv, and I had this decision to make, you know, do I move to Chicago and do the traditional improv route, which I thought about, or do I do my own thing? And I've always had a little bit of that entrepreneurial side mindset. So I said, you know what, I'm going to start my own group here in Philadelphia. And
okay.
So since I was doing that, my dream at the time was I'm going to make the second city of Philadelphia. So I started an improv group, and I was both the artistic director and the business manager. So to help with the business side of things, I started getting really into books on personal development and motivation and business success. And that whet my appetite for the whole industry. And what got interesting is that between that, the improv, and I was studying and learning more improv as I went, I also studied and taught the martial arts. And what I started noticing is that there was the same kind of underlying concepts of success were for all three. And that's kind of what got me down that path, that, you know, a lot of the principles of success are pretty universal. It's just how you apply them. So I started using that stuff both in the improv, both on the business side and even on the performing side. Like, how do you take this principle of personal development and apply it to improv comedy? And it didn't take a huge leap of logic to realize that if I could apply motivation stuff to improv, I can reverse it and then use the improv as a tool to teach a lot of those personal development techniques.
Yeah, I know you've got that ebook out there, Smart Ass Success, and I know you have a lot of different, rules of the road, you know, on the road to success. You want to talk about those a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, like from that ebook, it's really that's at the website, themotivationalsmartass.com. I give away this free ebook for people who sign up, and that's kind of laid out the seven steps of figuring out and getting what you want. Because what I saw over the years is that a lot of people just don't know what it is they really want, and they said, "Oh, I'd love to do it, I just don't know what it is." And so, you know, the first step, and this goes, I think, a lot of people don't realize this applies to everything, but it's really tapping your creativity. That's such a useful, and that's the first step in that ebook. And it's such a useful tool. Obviously, it makes sense for performers and improvisers. But, you know, people think they're not creative. It's because they've been fooled into thinking that creativity just means artistry, like painting or writing. But people, and all of us are creating every day. I mean, when you decide what you're going to cook for dinner that night, you're creating, you're coming up with an idea. So we're all doing it. It's just that society tends to beat the creativity out of us as we're growing up. You know,
right.
Like you got to watch what you say. You got to stay in line. You got to be very careful. And, you know, I found that if we can just get people to tap back into that creativity, it not only can help you with those artistic endeavors, it can help you brainstorm problems. It can help you figure out some of those things going on in your head, like what is it I really want to do? It can, you know, you can find multiple options for compromise or even better when you're talking about relationships and things like that. So, you know, that's kind of a long answer to one bit of your question, which is the rules of the road. But that's, I think, the most important is, you know, getting people, if they do nothing else but do that, I think, you know, that's when they start getting happier and more fulfilled.
So why do you call it a smartass?
What's that?
Why do you call it the smartass success?
Oh, because the website is motivationalsmartass.com. And so it kind of plays off of that. And that came from the fact that, you know, I really do believe in that motivational thing. But when you hear the term motivational speaker, it really conjures up a lot of images. And I've seen speakers like this. I've been around for a while. And I realize it's really not me. Like, I don't have that deep, inspirational, raspy, like, you know, come climb the mountain with me story. And I don't like the corny humor that I see a lot of typical motivational speakers use. You know, my humor, and when I work with speakers on figuring out, what I realize is that I'm at my best on stage or off when I'm just like ranting about stuff that bothers me and making fun of things, which is not really a very motivational speaker type, you know, stereotype. And I think someone said something once, I said something back, and in my head I had this thought of like, oh, wow, he must think I'm a real smartass. I think I was in the middle of trying to come up with like a postcard campaign. I was like, ooh, that'd be a good little tagline. You know, why hire a motivational speaker when you could hire a motivational smartass? And, you know, from there a brand was born.
You're sort of like a hip motivational guru.
That's what I like to think of it as, yeah.
Yeah, because one of the things that I like about your blog is this has a very irreverent tone to it. I know you had one blog post on there about Game of Thrones and these two guys. There was a news item. These two guys were taking it too seriously, and they started fighting over a TV show, and you just went on a rant about those guys.
I do, and you know what it is? Everything refines over years, and so the blog started just as kind of a place for me to write. And what I've noticed over time is that, you know, if I could really brand it properly, it's really my goal in life is to stamp out stupidity. I just think that people do so many stupid things on a grand scale. Like, that story was about two cousins fighting over a discussion about the Game of Thrones, and one cousin threw the other one through a window as a result of that. now, you know, we all and everyone listening laugh because we're like, oh, that's so dumb. And we don't do things that are that stupid, but, you know, we all make just stupid little mistakes, you know, things that make our lives more complicated and more difficult than they need to be because, and this kind of ties back to the improv, because in that moment when you decide what to do, that snap judgment ends up being something that, instead of helping, ends up hurting.
I know in one of your interviews you were talking about, actually it wasn't you, it was one of the hosts mentioned that they had the advice that one should learn to focus on and love their audience and get outside of their self. Talk a little bit more about how improv gets you outside of yourself and helps you focus on your audience.
Well, you know, improv is one of the few, if only, art forms where, you know, the audience is in the presence of you creating it, which freaks a lot of people out. But I love it because that means if I go and start saying something on a stage, I get instant feedback as to whether that's working or not. And, you know, just in the same way in an improv scene, I have my partners that I need to build off of what they say and do. There's an extent to which I can adjust what I do based on that audience response as well. Now, that's a dangerous, it's a slippery slope because there are some improvisers that do nothing but pander to the audience, like they just throw out cheap jokes that get laughs but don't really, it kind of screwing the rest of the scene or the show. So there's a line to walk, but, you know, one of the things that, especially as being kind of the person running a lot of those shows, is I would try to size up the audience as quickly as possible and, you know, get a sense, is a high-energy audience or a low-energy audience? So are they responding to the physical comedy or are they responding to the quick-wit comedy? And, you know, by doing that, you get that, you know, you are a little bit out of yourself because rather than being 100% focused just on what is coming out of your mouth, you're paying very close attention to the response. So it's collaborative in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know some of the improv that I've done, it really does take you outside of yourself. And you're not as self-conscious. And I think I've even used it for presentations and speeches I've done as well. It really helps when you kind of, you get that energy back from the audience.
It's an interesting phrase, this outside yourself, because it's one way of thinking about it, but I think almost to be contrarian to that is, with improv, it's about being in the moment, which is something we all have trouble doing.
Right.
And so it's like you're not necessarily outside of yourself. You're still you, and you're still, in your first-person perspective. It's not like when I do improv, I feel like I'm floating over myself, seeing myself,
Right.
But, when you're so in the moment, it's when you're thinking ahead. What am I going to say, 3 lines from now? Or where do I think I'm taking this scene? That's when people get into trouble. But when you do nothing but focus on this moment, you're actually able to simultaneously, focus on yourself while paying attention to everything around you, because, your time frame is just right here.
And that ain't easy, folks. And that ain't easy at all.
No, it's not, but that's funny. That's one of the things that I got, one of those crossover things, because I really first started developing that skill in the martial arts.
Hmm.
Because, when you're sparring with someone or fighting someone, if you think too far ahead, you're going to get punched in the face. And,
right.
I had an instructor once at a seminar, and it took me like 2 years to really figure out what he meant by this line. But he was talking about something. He said, you can't sneak up on a mirror. And then he laughed and walked away. And just kind of left. It was like it was one of those. He was a younger guy, but it was almost like one of those kung fu moments where the Zen master like says something and then leaves. but you know what it was is it took me again literally took me a couple of years to really realize what he was saying, which is that when you walk up to a mirror, as soon as you see yourself, you see yourself instantly.
Right.
Because all a mirror does is reflect. It's empty. It has no agenda. But there are times
right.
where you're sitting at your desk and you're lost in thought, you're walking down the street, and somebody can come right up to you, and you won't even know they're there until they touch you and interrupt you.
Uh-huh.
So the key to being fast in the martial arts was to be empty and just be like a mirror. All you're doing is just reflecting. So whatever's coming at you, you're just there in the moment. You're not overthinking like, I'm going to do this fake move and then try to kick him here and then punch him here. You're just empty. Then that translated to improv, and that was a breakthrough moment when it came to performance, is that I see so many improvisers who try to plan ahead. If you're doing short-form improv, the audience gives you a suggestion. Their mind starts filling in, what are some jokes I can say? And here's a funny direction I could take this scene.
Mm.
Whereas the best improvisers just stay in the moment. You say your first line, and then you wait and see what your partner gives you back. Just like a mirror.
Mm.
Then you bounce
off
that.
Make it more organic.
Exactly. And that's where the best creativity happens. The scenes that suck are always the ones where you can tell that, five lines later the person says something, and you're like, they've been trying to say that line in the scene for the past 5 minutes. And it's never as funny as they thought it was going to be.
It's like Bruce Lee said about flow like water.
Flow like water.
Flow like water.
I have a plaque some people gave me that has that quote on it, Whatever water is, it becomes. It becomes the teapot. It becomes the bowl. But you can't grasp it, but it can break mountains.
There you go. I've studied Taekwondo before, too, and I've also noticed that when you keep your mind. Well, we had a drill where I had my eyes closed, and the instructor could put you in a chokehold from behind, from the side, from the front, and you had to keep an open mind. You don't know where things are going to come from. You don't know where the attack is coming, going to be coming at you.
Yeah, I used to do this drill in my martial arts class where you go, you just touch wrist to wrist with another partner.
Uh-huh.
The one person moves their hand, and if you're the other person, your goal is just to try to maintain wrist contact no matter where they go. But then the next level is the follower closes their eyes. And I actually do that exercise in my improv rehearsal sometimes, just because it's the exact same mindset. If you can close your eyes and be 100% in the moment, because if you try to think ahead, that's when you lose contact. So, basically it's attacking, it's the same problem. I mean, that's what creative teachers do, though, is you try to get, if the one method is not working, you got to come up with different drills and techniques and methods of teaching it.
Right.
Get people out of their box.
Yeah, I think, I knew I was getting a bit out of hand, though, when I came in one day, and one of the people was like, "So are we gonna do some kind of weird martial arts exercise today?" No. we'll do some other stuff. We'll just do a scene.
So now I know that you counsel people and companies and corporations and things like that. Do you ever, you still work with actors?
A little bit, you know, not too much. I mean, I certainly wouldn't be opposed to it. But yeah, most of the stuff I've done it in the past. Most of my stuff these days is with companies, with associations, conferences, and once in a while I do some improv stuff still. But as far as acting or acting workshops, not as much.
And then you do stand-up comedy too, right?
I do a bit of it. Yeah, I started studying stand-up, which you know, anyone who's performed either stand-up or improv knows that they're two completely different animals.
Exactly.
But you know, a lot of what I am doing as a speaker is keynote style speaking, where you're on a stage, you have a presentation, not just I weave improv into it, but there's a lot of like storytelling stuff. And I realized that learning that stand up was going to help me. So even though it was hard coming from an improv background doing stand up, I've been doing more of that. So it's mostly within the speaking. I do some open mics here and there, just to kind of throw myself into the lion's den, I guess.
How do you combine the motivational speaking with the improv, or do you?
I mean, my primary business now is kind of motivational speaking and training, and improv, I use improv as a metaphor. So the primary message, my speech title is Dinged Happens, which is based on an improv game. You've probably seen it, it might be by a different name, but where I'll start telling a story, and whenever a volunteer rings a bell, I have to change the story. Just, you know, roll back a little bit, so it's, you know, once upon a time there's a girl who had a pet dog, ding. Once upon a time, there's a pet cat, ding, pet mouse, ding, pet llama, whatever. So then I play that game to start the speech, and then that becomes the metaphor is that, you know, we think we want life to be planned out, and we want our business to be planned out, but when we think we've got it figured out, you know, ding, universe makes us change. It throws an unexpected event. And anyone can do well when everything goes as planned. What really separates people who succeed from those who fail are the ones who are able to navigate with those unexpected dings.
And right. Those curveballs.
And then the same mentalities and techniques that let an improviser improvise on stage in a comedy performance, those same skills can help a business person or help someone in their personal development.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And what kind of companies do you usually work with?
You know, I don't really have a strong industry niche, so I've done some Fortune 500. I had a bunch of gigs with Verizon. I've been doing some accounting companies, oddly enough, which is a very good audience, weirdly enough. You would think they'd be boring, but... and lately I've been doing a lot of work with, like, hospitality-type places, some hotel chains and some catering associations, things like that. And oddly enough, the weirdest one is... I've never pursued this, but every year I always get one or two gigs just coming out of nowhere for, like, the legal field. Like either a bar association or court administrators or something. So it's, you know, my favorite gigs are the, I love doing conferences, like the keynote type things, because the audience there is a little looser, you know, because a lot of people treat a conference like a vacation. So, you know, with my topic, they have more fun, they're a little looser, you know, and I enjoy that environment. But really, it'll be, you know, 500 people at a keynote or 10 people in a workshop. So I just love, you know, teaching and being in front of a group.
Talk a little bit more about Say Yes And. What's the concept behind that book?
Well, Say Yes And is an idea that within my kind of keynote speech, the Ding Happens speech, it's one of the three main points I make about how to apply improv to life. And what I found is that over the years, that's the point that people kept referring to as, like, this is the most impactful thing you said. So it took me about 4 years to actually get the message and write a book on that one topic. And the premise there is that it's to tell people that improvisers, on stage or off, when ding happens, say yes and as opposed to yes but.
Hmm.
And yes but is a very common visceral response that we all frankly have when we're presented with a new opportunity or when something goes wrong. You know, we want to stay in our comfort zone and just say, yeah, but... you know, that's not my responsibility, or yeah, but I want things to stay the same. And yes and is a bit scarier because it forces you to step into new territory or out of your comfort zone. But once you do that, you really, you know, that's where all the good stuff lies. That's where you grow. it's really the key to relationships. I mean, it's a simple question when you're interacting with other people. Do you prefer if they say yes but to you or yes and? So by the flip side, the more you yes and other people, the more the better those relationships will be. You know, that's what the book is about, is about how do you do it, all the different areas you can apply it, and how you can learn it.
Yeah, you're talking my language, because I think we as performers, I think that's really, it kind of separates us to a degree, is that we do have a tendency to say yes and. I mean, you know, I had a call about a possible role in a TV show that's shooting around here in the D.C., Baltimore, Washington area called House of Cards. And I got a call last night, and then they asked, could I be available today? Possibly, but it turned out I didn't get the role, but I had an attitude of yes and.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, as a performer, you have to have that. You get offered things at the last second. You may be offered a role you're not comfortable with. I mean, I could go on and on.
Yeah, I think that's the big one. I mean, I think most actors, when offered a role, their instinct is yes, right? It's that second part you said, which is when you're offered something that's a little out of your comfort zone or something that's
right,
not what you normally do. That's when the instinct kicks in to be like, well, maybe not. And you never know what could happen. If you take a role that's out of your comfort zone, I mean, that could open so many doors for you if you're just willing to take a chance and try it.
And there's a risk. I mean, behind that and is a risk.
Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, without risk, there's no reward. And that's one of the, you know, one of the keys that I discovered about improv, you know, because I run in the group, we'd have auditions. And in the first few years, it was always about the resume and the skills, you know, how good did they do and how much experience do they have. And what I realized that the resume was absolutely no indicator of how that person would perform in the group over time. And the real indicator was their mentality. And what I realized is the person walked in the door, regardless of the level of experience, if they had fun and looked like they'd be fun to work with, and most importantly, seemed like they were willing to mess it up, like if something went wrong, they didn't get down on themselves, they didn't get upset, they just kind of laughed at it and moved on. Those are always the people that would improve the fastest and ultimately perform the best.
Hmm.
And I think that same rule applies in pretty much any endeavor, is that if you're just willing to have fun and you let go of that fear of making mistakes, like if you're able to take those risks, that's where the success lies. The other people are the ones who, you know, they plateau very quickly.
Well, that's easier said than done. I mean, like you say, if you come in with that straight-laced, kind of fist-tightening, white-knuckle attitude, you're gonna really have a lot of problems, because at best you'll be overthinking it. I did try stand-up comedy one time years ago. One of the older comics told me this. He said, brother, he said, you can't overthink it. You can't overthink it.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I realized over the years of doing presentations that I think I do my best when I'm just a tad underprepared.
Hmm.
Not so much that I don't know what I'm saying or I'm going to lose my place, but where it's not so polished that I know exactly every word, how I'm going to hit it, because I get that in-the-moment energy when it's just a touch less, if that makes sense.
At least
you're more open
to
what's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. And when you've got an improv background, that feeds into it, as opposed to trying. Like for me, there's so many actors who are afraid of improv. Improv is so much easier to me than scripted work.
Well, Avish, we're coming up on the end of the show. You want to put any more websites out there or any more books, anything at all?
Yeah, well, the two places I'd love to send people to who are listening, the first is motivationalsmartass.com, which is a blog. It's got the Humorous Personal Development blog, websites, and speaking info. And if you're interested in the book Say Yes And, that could be found at sayyesand.com. You can check out the book and get it there and learn more about that.
Okay. Hey, well, that's a fantastic interview we just had, man. We're definitely going to have you on again. Wow, you just have so much wisdom.
Oh, well, I'm a speaker, so once you get me started talking.
I noticed. It's an easy interview for me and Nadia.
I like to do that.
Yeah.
Okay, Avish. Well, hey, thanks a lot, man, and have a great night.
You got it. Thank you both very much.
Okay. Okay, we got a few seconds left, so I'll just say, actors out there, do something for your career every day and break a leg. Night.